Money, 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 goes the song. It's a rich man's world. Money is spoken of everywhere, isn't it? If you listen in a cafe, it won't be long before you hear a conversation about money or what money can buy. You will read in the papers about interest rates, maybe going up, maybe not. And you'll read about universal credit and the long wait for money to live on. I remember well in the 1990s, Wendy might remember the years exactly, when we had a mortgage and the interest rates just kept going up and how scary that was. And I hope I never forget that sensation of living a bit on the edge of things. Some people live with it day by day. Money has its own power. I've borrowed from the congregation because I'm much too humble to carry money. A coin, a lovely pound coin. We know what they look like. It's got the Queen's head on one side and a Scottish thistle on the other. £1, nice and shiny. There's something about money. It has its own power and beauty, rather important. And of course, so it should, because without it, we can't buy the bread to live on. It has that imprimatur of the state. It has the authority of the system. Rulers love to put their image on the coin or a note. In the Third Reich, Hitler loved to have his image on the coinage. He even used to have specially minted coins to give out to those who supported him. Our own notes are a bit nicer. And we've now got Jane Austen on one of our notes, Winston Churchill, J.M.W. Turner, the artist, is on the £20 note. And if you're lucky enough to have a £50 note, you will discover Matthew Bolton and Isaac Watts, the engineers. But of course, money is not real. It's an invention. It's a fiction. It's not as real as the song of a thrush or the laugh of a toddler playing in the park. Money is a creation. And I can't quite remember this, but banks create money. They have the authority to lend you money, which is all done electronically or in the old days done in a ledger. And when you borrow that money and then pay it back, it all becomes real. It doesn't exist before that. It's not like there's a vault with lots of money in, most of it anyway. But we still believe in it, and it has this power over us. In the estates of our parish, just hundreds of yards from us here, there are people who are worried about benefit delays, low pay, universal credit, and so on. Research shows that 1/5 of social housing tenants, and that's a lot of the people around here, have no money to fall back on during the 6 weeks delay between applying for universal credit or getting some money from the state, getting their benefit paid. And we all know from our friends who are seeking asylum here that how little they have to live on. Some of you know very directly what it's like living on little. And Wendy and I have written you a letter, and we've been talking about stewardship these last few weeks, thinking of the gifts that God gives to us, including money, but also our time and talents. How do we use what we have for the things of God, the eternal things? I wonder how many times I've heard someone say, you must have heard it lots and lots of times, someone say, you can't take it with you, Vicar, or you can't take it with you, Jane, or whoever. And it's often when mortality nudges us that we get that moment of perspective, and the things that we think we've built up that are secure and are going to last forever, things built with money, we realize are quite fragile. So we hear from the prophet Isaiah, who knows exactly what it is that matters. We hear that it's not the bars of iron or the doors of bronze in his world. We might say the patios, the fast cars, the foreign holidays. These are not the things that are everlasting. These are not the treasures of the world. These are not the treasures of God. Jesus shows us the perspective of God. He is in trouble, as usual, is Jesus. The Pharisees are after him. They want to trap him. The passage we hear from the gospel today has a flavor of Newsnight about it, or maybe more of being doorstepped by a journalist, a tabloid journalist, who just asks you a perfectly reasonable question, and the wrong answer is going to see your political career plummet. If Jesus says, pay the tax to Rome, then his followers, some of them, will be deeply disappointed and feel betrayed. If he says, don't pay Rome any taxes, then he will be arrested. And Rome will be able to parade him as a warning to others. They'll be able to get the full force of the state onto him. So it was a bit of a gotcha moment. They must have felt very pleased with themselves, with their question. But Jesus too had mastered the art of the question. They question him and he questions them. It's a good tactic, I recommend it. When your children ask you lots of questions, maybe you just need to ask them some questions too. Jesus is not taken in by their game. They want to take a position of power over him. So he asks them a question, a fundamental question. They don't like it. Their anger is growing, and later we know they will get their revenge and Jesus will be crucified. But they are angry because he is not singing their tune. He's not investing all his energy in the things that matter to them. And it's all about this story of the coin. Imagine the coin with Caesar's head on. And this is, for them, a litmus test. They are challenged by Jesus and his commitment to the needs of all God's people. And Jesus is concerned about the salvation of God's people, their rescue from all that takes away their God-given humanity and their sparks and potential of life. But they are keen or happy to be content with Caesar, paying due allegiance to Caesar, a hollow god if there ever was one, who has to be put on a coin to impress. So insecure is Caesar and Hitler and many other leaders that they have to be put on a coin to give them some status. Our Father in heaven does not need such human games. And Jesus knows what he's about. He's fed the poor on the hillsides. He's healed the sick. He's told stories about good Samaritans. He's even eaten with the tax collectors, those who collect the money. Is it that Jesus doesn't care about Caesar? Is it that we should not care about Theresa May or Hassan Rouhani or Trump or any of the leaders of the world? Should we live in a religious bubble, well away from dirty secular things? No, I suggest that Jesus cares. He has seen the people suffering under heavy Roman taxes. He cares about them. But his answer to this is a deep and transforming one. He knew about the problems of his time. There were tax revolts in Jesus' time. Lots of people fought against the Roman Empire and its cruelty. But Jesus doesn't want the secular and religious to be put in separate boxes. The Pharisees would be happy with that. He calls us, as followers of him, disciples of him, to give our allegiance to the one who created everything, our Father in heaven, the creator of the everlasting treasures. That doesn't mean that the coins don't matter, but it means there's something bigger than all this earthly economics. Jesus dismisses their chat about Caesar because there is an everlasting king, our Father in heaven. And it is our image that we have in our heart, the image of God that's been planted in us. We've been made in God's image, not in the image of Caesar or even the monarch or even the prime minister. We're made in the image of God, made for love, made for goodness. The state does its best if things go well, but the states can be monstrous, as we know. Jesus calls us by name. God calls us to be true to the image in him of us, the image of God in us, God's image, and gives us a Christian name. Next Sunday, we're going to have a baptism and confirmation, and we will be remembering our own Christian names, our own God-given name, as we've been formed in the Christian life. So Caesar doesn't really matter. Of course, if you say that to earthly rulers, they get really annoyed because they want you to think that they matter very much. Jesus says, Caesar doesn't really matter. Let's talk about the things of God. I thought about doing it. Is it vinegar or you use or Coca-Cola to try and clean up an old coin? There's some trick you can do, isn't there? Maybe you could try this at home. HP sauce, that's right. So if you find an old penny coin that's tarnished, and you put it in HP sauce and take it out an hour or two later. You could try this at home, Luke. Then it'll be nice and shiny. So it's like the image of God in us has become tarnished and can't quite see it anymore. So we have to have it all cleaned up. And we do this, we try and clean ourselves up by our worship, by our Eucharist, by our acts of mercy and kindness, because we know that we are getting it wrong, because secretly we do worship the God of Mammon, whatever we say to each other. And so we have to try really hard to pull ourselves back. But we need to remember God's abundance and generosity, because world economics says there's not enough. We've got to make you suffer under austerity. Ooh, you can't do that. It would never work. The rich must be rich because they're cleverer than the rest of us. They're better. They deserve it. All this worldly austerity nonsense is around and we absorb some of it. Our Father in heaven says, I love you, I made you, you are precious, I am a God of abundance and generosity, and there is enough. If you believe it, the baskets will overflow with lots and lots of bread. During Hitler's rise to power, there were many in the church at that time in Germany very happy with the way things were. The trains ran on time, he was building some new motorways, and so on. And they preferred not to dwell on what was happening to the Jews, to the mentally ill, and so on. One Christian man, a man called Franz Jagerstatter, an Austrian, was called to serve in the army. He didn't believe that this was a just war. He didn't believe that the Bible justified the Nazi invasions of other countries. He was offended at the cult of Hitler. He wanted to worship the one true God. So he said no and was arrested and executed. And there were many other stories, not enough maybe, but there were other stories like that. This man, Franz, his duty to God overrode his obligations to Hitler, and he paid the sacrifice. The Pharisees we read about today are asked to Jesus what really matters to them. Who do they worship? And they're annoyed at the question because they know that the answer is not the right one. They do not want God to get close to them, the Pharisees. They would prefer to keep God in a box for a Saturday at the synagogue. What about us? Where is our loyalty and our allegiance? If God is like Jesus, then we too might need to let go of wealth and power and all the things we aspire for. And we might need to just worship God who is present with us, God who blesses us with so much. We might need to give him everything and not just a paltry share, because God is abundant and it is his image that is written on our hearts. Our task is to get that HP source and polish our hearts up so that they may worship the God who is our Father in heaven, abundant and generous. Amen.